Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League! Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham flick, and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet, and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to what will assuredly be a high-energy episode of the Internet's Most Dangerous Tottenham Hotspur Podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio, and we're here to talk about a game tonight that we would rather not talk about. Tottenham Hotspur lost 2-1 against Watford, presumably at, I don't know, whatever the fuck Watford play. Anyway, it really sucked, and we got two out of our three guys here to talk about it. So, joining me, as always, is my sidekick, Ben Daniels. Ben, how are you doing on this auspicious evening?
Great. Watford play at Vicarage Road.
Ah, sure. Yes, thank you. I am a plastic American, so naturally I would not know that.
Elton John was there. It was a very exciting occasion for everyone.
Very, very exciting for everyone. Next up, we have live from New York City, noted internet terrorist, Reno Wallabout. Reno, welcome back to the podcast. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you guys for bringing me in to inject some positivity into your all-too-negative podcast.
Yes, yes. We have a problem with positivity on this podcast, which is definitely why we brought you on.
Absolutely.
So, I don't have a better way to start this. That game really sucked. Ben, I'm sure you watched it in your sadness cave. Rob and I watched this in a bar full of Spurs fans, and I'm not sure which would have been worse. But it really stunk, especially because, I don't know about you guys, but when Spurs got that stupid own goal, I thought we were kind of going to take that game by the scruff of the neck and score another. But that really didn't happen. I guess if you look at this game, it's a bit of a paradox because on the one hand, it was stupid and we lost and it was incredibly frustrating. On the other, as a lot of people online have been pointing out this week, it was one of our best defensive performances of the year, right, Ben?
Yeah, it is a stupid game. So it was very frustrating because, like, as you said, you know, we've had games like this that are incredibly frustrating where, you know, when we knock on the door a little bit, we're struggling for fluency a little bit, you know, we're not quite finding the breakthrough. And then we do get some stupid goal, like the one we scored. And then, you know, things kind of open for us. The other team opens up for a few on the counter. And then, you know, we walk away with a 3-0 victory, and we all feel pretty good about ourselves. That's not what happened this time, unfortunately. We got our stupid goal, and then instead of getting two more, Watford got two more. So it's one of those things where, you know, it was encouraging because, you know, we talked about this after the Man United game where we won 3-0, but it was not like the most comprehensive swashbuckling, you know, performance of the season. We gave up a lot of chances and could easily have gone into the break 2-0 down. And Pochettino tinkered and got the team working a little better. And we finally saw off the game. And I think it'd be very easy for a lot of managers to just come away from a 3-0 win at Old Trafford and be like, great, you know, everything's good. And Pochettino recognized that, you know, he had some intuitive, I guess, of expected goals. It was, you know, we won 3-0, but by and large, it wasn't a 3-0 performance. And he took steps to try and rectify that. We went back to a back three, which we'd played against Fulham and abandoned against Fulham, to try and give us a little more defensive solidity. And for the most part, it worked. We were defensively better than we had been in a lot of other games. You know, the two goals we gave up, two set pieces, one from a free kick that never should have been given. And we still should have defended them better. It's like, you know, these are not high opportunity chances. They were not like great goal scoring opportunities. They were a bit unlucky. But you know, it's hard to like come up with a good takeaway. Some of the process was better, but it's a shitty result. don't know. Mostly I'm just mad.
Rob, I mean, I think that's the overwhelming sort of feeling among Spurs fans, where I think there's on some level a fundamental understanding of, for once, we actually weren't that lucky, and maybe we shouldn't read too much into this. But I guess between all the gnashing of teeth over what's going on with the stadium and this sort of feeling that, you know, any drop points is a huge problem because Liverpool and City are just going to eat everyone alive this year, it seems like some people are taking this loss a little bit harder than maybe they should.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. It was a really, really stupid game, and it made me really mad watching us lose it. But we didn't play that bad defensively. Didn't play that great offensively. But if I told you that we'd get 9 points out of 4 games with everything else going on, and that one of the games would include United at Old Trafford, and that's the one we would win, you'd probably be like, all right, yeah, I'll take that. So, and you know, Watford might be good. I don't think they're really a top four team, but they're not bad. And they were at home, but they sort of played us like they were the away team. They defended really hard and they scored on 2 dumb set plays, which, you know, you would hope you would defend those better, but shit happens.
Well, let's talk about those stupid set plays, because, I don't know, let's get the excuse-making portion of the podcast out early so we can just blame the team and, you know, rend our garments for the rest of it. The first one, the one that equalized the game, came after basically Dembele was fouled, and then for some dumb reason they chose to give them a free kick, you know, right outside of our box, and that was really annoying. And the second one was, you know, I guess there's nothing wrong with the set piece being played, but basically our best center back, Toby Alderweireld, blew his assignment and just wasn't able to cover, you know, his man, and they scored off of it. And that's 2 really dumb things that are going to happen. I don't know. I'm looking for lessons there. Maybe Dembele should be better at not giving away or giving the ref an excuse in our own territory. Maybe Toby should mark his man a little better. I don't know. The problem, I guess, I look at is I'm not sure what lessons Pochettino has to teach from either of these set pieces, but I guess, and Rob, I'm curious, it's your thought, Watford was creating some sustained pressure, and while they didn't create a lot of chances off that pressure, maybe that's the thing that, you know, if I was breaking this game down in Tottenham's film room, I would be spending a lot of my time on.
Yeah, it's definitely not like we were playing well during that sequence. We were under pressure, and all right, we're back to talking about Pochettino and substitutions. But so he had Dyer and Wanyama on the bench, and could have put either of them in, changed the formation, taken out a center back, done something to change things up while we were winning, or even after we'd conceded the first goal. But then, once you're losing, what are you going to do with your defensive midfielders? And without someone like Lamela on the bench and with Llorente on the bench, you know, it really limits the ability to change the match at that point. I think with defending the set pieces against a team like that, you blow one of those, okay, fine. Blowing two of them in the same match, that's kind of a problem. I feel like they need to do some work on that. And if Gareth Southgate is really supposedly coaching us on set plays, maybe he should work on defending them instead of just scoring them.
I mean, Ben, what's your big, I mean, if you were to have a big takeaway, if you were a, you know, a coach for Spurs, you finally succeeded in ousting Mauricio Pochettino, like, what's your big takeaway from this match? What do you have the team working on? At least, I mean, is it defensively? Is it, I mean, would you focus more on how we played offensively here?
You know, I mean, a couple of things. The defensive errors were both individual errors, which has been the story of all 4 goals that we've conceded this season. You know, we had Davinson missing a header on a cross against Newcastle. We had Davinson falling down on a low cross against Fulham. And then we had two, you know, crosses from set plays where our center backs failed to pick up their marker. And, you know, we conceded in more routine, straightforward fashion, but it was still, you know, an individual defensive mistake on a cross. And I don't know what it is systematically that's causing us to keep making these individual errors in these types of situations, but, you know, it's a small sample size, but it's a, you know, it looks like a pattern. Whether it's actually part of a larger pattern or just, you know, you happen to draw a circle around these four goals and that's just what happened. And, you know, the rest of our problems over the course of the season are going to be very different. You know, it's hard to read too much into after four games, but it's concerning to me that when we have, you know, arguably three of the best center backs in the league, we shouldn't keep giving up goals like this. They should be better at that. And I don't really know what the story is there.
I mean, again, you said small sample size. Is there like, do you think there's an element to this of like Watford's on a roll right now? Is that a stupid thing to say in terms of looking at it and just, you know what? Tottenham's just sort of beat the wrong end of their bad luck.
I mean, both of us were perfect going into this game. You know, we were two of the four perfect teams left. And after beating United 3-0, regardless of the circumstances, you'd think our role was just as a compelling narrative as Watford's role.
Except our coach publicly said that this was going to happen as soon as the United game was over. So
he undermined the spirit of the hot streak. Is that what you're saying?
Or he recognized that there are some underlying problems and had a feeling that this might happen.
Or he has money on this game.
Now that sports betting is legal in the U.S., it's corrupted the English football even further than its already depraved gambling problem. I don't know. Like, Rob, I'm mostly frustrated by the substitution issues.
That's an interesting discussion because I think, and I mean, there's an issue with including them on the bench, but I think we all believe that something is wrong with Dyer. You know, my guess is he's just gassed from the World Cup and needs some games off. I think we all assume that Wanyama's not quite there. And, you know, I don't know if it's just we don't want to throw a bunch of youth players on and we have just a lot of wounded on our bench right now or what. But if they were able to play, which you would think an inclusion on the substitution bench would indicate, you know, it's concerning that we weren't throwing those guys on, certainly after the first goal.
Right. I mean, Luke Amos was with the team. He just didn't make the squad. And it's like, if you're going to have two defensive midfielders, neither of whom can give you 30 minutes, then just fucking put the kid on the bench.
Yeah. I don't think Luke Amos would have solved this problem, but at least he's a warm body who might be able to do something. I mean, Harry Winks, in theory, should have been able to do something. I know he's not going to get in the box and really knock dudes around, but
I mean, again, I think it's less a matter of, especially after we conceded the first goal, it was less a matter of, you know, are we going to have the best midfielder on our team come in rather than our system isn't working great. You know, he made the change against Fulham to drop Davis and Sanchez and put on Eric Dyer and go to a back four instead of a back three. You know, that option was available to Pochettino to just change the look of the team. And we had Dembele playing as the deepest midfielder. We've talked a lot over the years about what his strengths are and how that role kind of neuters his ability to dribble through midfield and help create things for our attack when he has to, you know, play that positionally disciplined holding midfielder role. And so even though Luke Amos is, you know, only okay, just putting someone behind him who, you know, isn't going to be a total tire, but lets him like off the leash a little bit, you know, it would have given us something in attack when we don't really have any attacking substitutions on the bench or substitutes on the bench because Lamella's hurt and Son's, you know, still fighting a war somewhere. You know, I mean, that was like Roberto Mancini at Man City would always like bring on like Nigel de Jong late and everyone, when they were like chasing a goal, people would be like, well, that's stupid. Why are you bringing on a defensive midfielder? But the reason was it was to let Yaya Toure have a little more freedom so he could influence things further forward. And I think something like that to let, you know, Dembele off his leash a little bit would have been useful. And again, if Dier and Wanyama couldn't give us that for 30 minutes, then what the fuck were they doing on the bench?
Well, exactly.
And if they could, then why did Pochettino leave them out for so long?
Well,
or, I mean, he brought on Harry Winks in like the 80th minute, and he looked good. And he looked good in a previous cameo earlier this season, like what game that was. But you know, he's on the bench for a reason. Like, I don't know, try something. Don't sit there twiddling your thumbs until like the 75th minute, you know, just hoping and praying, you know, because even for all that our defense was, you know, largely better than it has been, our attack was not very good. And we had a lot of trouble creating really good opportunities. And it's just there are opportunities to do something, and it just was frustrating watching him not take them.
Well, let's talk about that. I think we should. There are some positives to this performance, even on attack, that we should talk about. But since we're talking about subs, let's talk about this. You know, I think it's one thing to assume, like, for whatever reason, if that bench is the walking wounded, then all right, fine, whatever. There's not a great defensive midfielder option. There's not a great, you know, Lamella's not there. You can't throw him on to mix things up. Whatever. It is what it is. But what was perplexing to me is when he did throw Harry Winks on, and maybe it was a surprise to Pochettino, I thought Winks looked great. I thought there was a lot of explosiveness to his running. I mean, he did not look like a guy who was hurt. It looked like, you know, he definitely only had his ankle worked on in Qatar and definitely didn't undergo a really impressive PED regimen. I mean, Rob, I mean, I know you and I sort of remarked upon it. He really looked up for it and very good, and I'm just a little confused what, you know, why we didn't bring him on earlier, even if, you know, if Poch is worried about how to deal with them on set pieces. I guess Harry Winks isn't your answer, but maybe he stops them from getting so many of those set pieces.
He looked full of deer antler spray to me. I thought he was, he looked like back to full fitness, but
yeah, he looked like a man who believed he could grow facial hair, which he really isn't, but I'm glad he thinks he can.
He's committed to it though.
I mean, he had a lot of hormone treatments that have just like sent his testosterone through the roof. That his whiskey mustaches are growing all over his body now. He can't control it.
No, but yeah, I mean, maybe. I mean, we don't know exactly his sharpness in his training. So he came on in like the 86th minute, which seems incredibly pointless, but. I also thought it was strange that Dembele went from being the 30-minute-a-game closer to playing to starting two straight games in the wrong position, and surprise, surprise, not really being very effective in the second half of his second straight start. So yeah, I mean, I don't maybe they just didn't really know what they were going to get out of Winks, but there's certainly no reason not to try him a little bit earlier. Although, you know, again, it's Watford. You can almost forgive Pochettino for saying, for fuck's sake, it's Watford.
Well, I think that raises another interesting question, because you look at this game, you look at our attacking performance, which I think, generally speaking, I think we'd agree was better than Watford's, despite the scoreline. And, you know, there was a lot of, I mean, Ben, you sort of alluded to this earlier, I think we've seen this game before where, you know, I don't think it's that we were completely lacking a strategy or that we weren't doing things that were effective, but, you know, when it came time to get a good shot off or whatever, our guys were getting closed down or they were getting closed down right before it. I think early on in the game, Lucas Moura, you could really see him getting into dangerous positions, and right before he could get a shot off, you know, two guys would just, you know, sort of crunch him before he could get to the ball. I think Dele Alli almost duplicated his Crystal Palace goal before a Watford player stuck his foot in there and prevented him from getting the shot off. It's how much of this is down to the way we played, or lack of goals, or lack of shots even? How much of that's down to the way we played? How much do you think is down to Watford being good defensively?
I mean, I think we definitely helped Watford's defensive performance by continuing with this Lucas Moura as our number nine experiment. We've seen Harry Kane play much deeper than he used to this season, while Lucas Moura kind of like makes runs in front of him. And it's been pretty good so far. Lucas has had a very good season. But, you know, Watford plays with two big crunching center backs, and they were crunching Lucas Moura a lot. And Harry Kane was playing very deep and was not, you know, getting opportunities in the box where, you know, he could put his physicality up against a guy like Christian Cabasele, you know, and maybe provide more of an outlet and create more shooting opportunities for himself just by being, you know, more of a physical presence in the box.
I mean, this is one of those things where I think I don't blame Pochettino for trying it. It's certainly been working so far this year. And frankly, I don't mind blame him for persisting with it for a while because it was almost working a couple times in the first 30 minutes or so. But certainly, you know, maybe at the beginning of the second half.
That penalty.
Yeah, maybe at the beginning of the first, at the beginning of the second half, maybe by like the 60th minute, I think it's like it's time to switch it up because this isn't working. But it almost worked. I mean, it's this is a really like frustrating game on another level. Like I'd almost rather just gotten our asses kicked.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think you're right. Like I don't fault Pochettino for sticking with the attack that's, you know, that did score three goals against United. But at some point he had to realize it's not working. You know, we don't have a lot of facilitators on the bench. We have Lucas, who's a very creative, tricky player. You could give him more opportunities on the ball to create a rather than vice versa. And it might have paid dividends. I mean, I'm just surprised we didn't really see that. And I, you know, Harry Kane's continued, lack of shots and lack of goal scoring opportunities is concerning when, you know, you have a guy who's arguably the best striker in the world, not maximizing his shooting opportunities when you're struggling to create chances. Just dumb. Unless Harry Kane is just broken. But I just don't know why that wasn't a tactical shift that we had ever. It's frustrating.
It's incredibly stupid. I mean, Rob, what is there a bright point in this match for you? If you're looking for a takeaway, is there something that, you know, you're really happy with?
Well, I don't know about really happy with, but I mean, I think the general response that our defense looked a lot better is encouraging. Davinson Sanchez, who had a couple of pretty rough matches to start the season, looked a lot better, except for that one moment where he got unceremoniously trucked by Troy Deeney.
Yeah, that wasn't fun.
Yeah, that wasn't rough.
But, well, you know, that's happened to other defenders before, so he's not the first.
Well, you know, and Troy Deeney, he's just trying to score one last goal, and that'll be enough for his family and him to leave this life of crime behind. You know, he'll eventually get out. You can't blame Sanchez for losing out to a man on the edge like Troy Deeney, who really does look like, you know, a grizzled film noir hero.
Star of Guy Ritchie films.
Exactly.
But no, I thought, and you can separate bad set-piece defending from open play defending and say that in open play, the defense looked a lot better, a lot more solid. And you can squint and say, you know, the attack didn't look great, but Son comes back and Lamella gets healthy and we fix our midfield and Winks maybe comes back into the starting lineup and maybe there's an attack again. And I go back to the point I made a little bit earlier, which is with everything going on, with all things considered and with Lloris and his mess and with the stadium and with playing all of these away games, to be where they are right now is really not that bad. So we should be optimistic. Ben, except for our next game.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. Are you feeling optimistic about Liverpool, Ben?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Mohamed Salah is having a, you know, very mediocre season. Yeah, hasn't scored nearly 30 goals yet. So, you know, they're vulnerable, clearly.
I mean,
we're going to get trucked. Like, it's fine. I mean, Liverpool are very good. We're good.
I'll tell you,
things could go right for us, but like right now, Liverpool's season is like going very well. And you know, they don't look like they're getting results in spite of problems in their team. Like, they fixed a lot of holes. And
I mean, we had a lot of problems. We had a lot of problems, but our keeper didn't put one in the net by trying a Cruyff turn in his own box.
That's true, but
and I think it's worth Liverpool in a lot of ways. I feel like, I mean, we didn't have anything resembling their best offensive stretch against, was it Leicester they played last week? But you know, Liverpool almost had the sort of opposite game that we did, whereas they didn't look great but still grinded a result out of it. Or grind is the wrong word, but you know, despite their sort of late sort of wobble, they managed to hold on for a win.
Well, they conceded first to Leicester and then had to come back into it.
Yeah. But at the end, too, what Leicester looked like they were threatening, and they just couldn't quite get it in there. But anyway, I don't know. I don't have a lot of faith in our ability. Like, it's just, like you said, Ben, it feels like Liverpool out of a lot of momentum. But I guess, as we just proved, you have momentum until you don't. So.
Right. I mean, I guess the situation is like, you know, do we play for like a shootout where we just hope we outscore them? I don't know that I trust our ability to do that. And we saw what happens when we kind of sacrifice our attack for a better defense. And I don't know, you know, if that defense is good enough to keep them out and also create chances for ourselves.
I guess the flip side of that is, and Rob, I don't know if you agree with this, but I think if we play the way we played against Watford, Lucas Moura is certainly going to have more shots than he did in this game. I don't necessarily trust Liverpool to keep him shut out like Watford's defenders did.
Well, if we play them like we played them the first game last season, we certainly have a chance if we play on the, you know. Pochettino seems to finally learned his lesson about playing against Liverpool, so it's possible that he goes for a defensive performance again and plays Lucas in behind, and we hit them for two really stupid goals on the counterattack and things actually go our way. But, you know, that's not going to happen. We're going to get our asses kicked.
I hope we sound very stupid in 2 weeks. I'm not counting on it, but I hope we sound very stupid. I mean,
there's a good chance of that regardless, but.
I mean, Spurs are in an interesting place right now. Like you said, Ben, we're good. We're not great. We're probably a little bit on a level somewhere below Liverpool right now. But it's like, it's so early in the season where on the one hand we have these issues, on the other hand Pochettino seems much more aware of them than I feel like we typically are at this point in the year. You know, having a manager say that after a game like United, I'm not used to Pochettino doing that, let alone other managers we've had. So it's not like we're, you know, like the AVB years where we're sort of resting on our laurels and hoping results just sort of carry us through. I don't know. It's and then you combine that with all the drama over the stadium, which my guess is probably affects the team less than, you know, any of us, the most fans think that it does. We're in just such a weird, precarious situation, and we're probably not going to know how good we are for a few weeks. And then even then, we probably won't know because half the team will get injured on the international break. So,
yeah. I mean, I will say it'll be very like Spurs to beat Man U and then blow it against Watford and then come out and beat Liverpool and just be like, what is this? Nothing makes sense. What is any of this? And then we'll lose to Cardiff and give them their first win of the season. Like, who the fuck knows? Speaking of the international break, Wanyama came down with a case of internationalitis, hopefully, and not just a recurring knee problem has kept him out for, you know, literally, a season and change.
Literally, but everyone on Liverpool has come down with a case of internationalitis, and I'm a little irritated more of our guys haven't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Pep kept, like, everybody on City out. Harry Kane's got to go score goals for Gareth Southgate. You know,
Harry Kane needs a fucking rest. Like,
but if Wanyama is taking a break and it will be ready to come back into the team against Liverpool, I mean, that's a huge boost. I think so many of our problems have come with, as a result of us trying to balance a team around an unbalanced midfield, whether that's, you know, tinkering with how many center backs are playing or, you know, what's going on up top or, you know, how Eriksen and Dele Alli are playing. Adding a guy like Wanyama into the team who can give us that mobile defensive midfield coverage could solve a lot of our problems in both defense and attack in one fell swoop. So it's a lot of, you know, be pinning our hopes on Wanyama's knee magically coming back to life. But, you know, if he does, I think that, that definitely changes my calculus about how badly we're going to get our asses kicked by Liverpool. I think it'll only be like a 2-goal loss in that case.
Rob, who do you think is more important for that match to have healthy, Lamella or Wanyama?
Lamella.
No, is that just because you love Eric Lamella, or is that because you think he could add more to this team?
Well, I think Lamella is useful in the starting lineup, but is also unique in terms of his ability to actually help the team from the bench. We don't really have we don't have an attacker on the bench other than Lamella, who's really. I mean, and when Son comes back, maybe Son or Lucas becomes that guy on the bench, but. I think Lamella is such an important guy as an option. And then assuming that Dyer can actually play against Liverpool, then you don't really need worry about Wanyama as much. But I love Eric Lamella. That's really what it comes down to. I love him so much.
He's just the best. Let's talk about our other man crush on Spurs, who has successfully dodged the draft. We got some happy news that we should have led the podcast off talking about this. Hunming Sun has won a gold medal at the Asian Games, which is definitely a legitimate tournament. And now he doesn't have to serve his 2 years of military service. So he does not have to leave Tottenham Hotspur. This is pretty huge for Spurs, huh, Ben?
Yeah, I mean... You know, I was very shocked when we signed him to like a new 5-year deal this summer, because he's getting on in years, and you know, two of those years, like his last years in his twenties, would have been spent in military service, and it was just like I was very shocked that Levy would commit to 3 years for a guy who will be in his thirties and pay for 2 years while he's off fighting the North Koreans in World War III after Trump starts that. And instead, that gamble looks like it really paid off, and we have one of our best players who's going to be here through the prime of his career. And he seems, incredibly happy to stay. I think, the faith that Levy put in him by signing him to that deal is going to do a lot to make sure, if Sun keeps blowing up the way he has, he's not going to be in danger of leaving us. And so it turned out to be a very savvy long-term move.
It's funny that you use the word gamble. I assume you're not implying that Daniel Levy rigged the Asian Games or anything.
Certainly not. That would definitely not be something Daniel Levy's.
If Daniel Levy
evil Lex Luthor-like persona would be capable of.
If Daniel Levy was willing to fix games, we definitely wouldn't have had as many FA Cup replays as we've had over the last couple of years. So I don't.
Well, it's a lot easier to fix them in Asia, as you know.
Yes. Yeah. If only Brian was here for AIA, that.
That AIA partnership is finally paying dividends.
I mean, I know
some Tom Carroll performances.
I know loyalty means fuck all in sports, and how we got Son on the team probably speaks to that in a lot of ways. But I would like to think, like you said, Ben, that us sort of giving him a nice fat extension with no strings attached, regardless of how this turned out. I would hope that that would make it a lot easier for Son to come. I mean, he had very nice things to say about Spurs and Pochettino after literally as soon as they won the cup. Which is pretty great. And I hope it means something. But I guess even in the worst case scenario, if we do have to sell him, at least now we're going to get paid for it. So it's turned out, like you said, Ben, to a pretty win-win situation. But I think it's also worth remembering, Rob, have you ever seen a guy celebrate not getting drafted quite so, publicly as Sonny did?
Well, I wasn't alive and my father avoided the draft, so no, I guess I can say I haven't. I do think that was, we should take a minute to just reflect on how wonderful it was for so many English soccer fans to be supporting the South Korean under-23 national team in a random tournament played at 7:30 in the morning on a Saturday in the United States.
I was a little disappointed more Arsenal fans weren't aggressively rooting for Japan. Maybe I follow the wrong people on Twitter, but, you know, they really let me down.
I mean, it's just like that game was just so weird. Like, the stakes were just so wildly different for the teams involved. Like, half of the players were literally playing for their lives, or at least their livelihoods. And Japan was just playing a soccer game. Like, I don't even know how, like, as a Japanese player, whatever rivalry you have, like, you could, in good conscience, like, win that game. Like, that's, like, the ultimate piece of shit move.
I mean, they brought in a guy who plays in the Champions League. They brought him in as a ringer. I mean, I don't know. If I was a Japanese player, I wouldn't have to work too hard to work up the motivation to ruin his, you know, day.
Not his day, his life.
Yeah, no, but I could, you know, I could definitely, especially if I'm, like, an under-23 Japanese guy who, like, you know, Ruben Kazan is the height of my ambitions. You know, like I said, I think I could work up the motivation to make that guy sit behind a desk.
There like, might be some never, political things in play there, but we can leave those alone.
I've never felt less bad for, like, a losing team. Like, after the game, I have all the shots, you know, of, like, the sad runner-up, and it was just like, I fucking could not possibly care less about how sad you are. Like, these people are so happy to be avoiding having to do compulsory military service. Like, you lost to fucking Asian games. Like, who gives a shit?
I would like to see Tottenham win a trophy this year, only because I would like to see his son celebrates that more vigorously or avoiding military service. I just want to see the comparison. Also, I'd like to see Tottenham win a trophy.
Meh.
Or spoiled by the League Cup in 2008, Ben.
That's right.
Wonder how hard Kevin Vimmer was celebrating.
I mean, I'm pretty sure it was not safe for work.
I mean, as you can tell, he usually celebrates pretty hard. But
well, they usually show the spouses celebrating these games, right? This shouldn't be hard to find.
Well, didn't he? I think he had a game Saturday or Sunday. But I'm sure, you know, I'm sure he sent a nice note.
A nice bouquet.
Nice bouquet of chocolate flowers. That's what Austrians do, right?
A nice bouquet of Wiener Schnitzel.
When do you expect to see Son back in the team, and how long after that do you think he's going to start?
Well, they called him up for the senior team.
No, I don't give a fuck about the South Korean team, like, for Tottenham.
No, but that's like that. He needs a fucking break, and now he's going off to international duty.
Right, it's not again. Like he's coming home this week.
So we're thinking. I mean, I don't think we're going to see him as a sub for like 3 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I have to give him a long rest because he clearly needs it. He looked like exhausted.
I mean, we haven't given any fucking body else a rest, so.
Yeah, but he went and played like 7 games in the span of like 2 weeks, like after playing the World Cup. Like, the man needs a rest.
Yeah, it's going to be really shitty if he's actually starting games for the South Koreans, which he absolutely will. But that man should be like brought in as a sub. Like,
yeah, it's fucked up. Fuck the international break. Yeah. Like, come on, we just had a World Cup. We don't need this. It's stupid.
Ban international football. Yeah, wait, so. Can someone explain to me, it's part of this fucking Nations Cup thing for this international break in Europe?
Yeah, I don't know what that is. I'm going to be honest. I have paid zero attention.
That's what they've done to replace friendlies.
So, but, I mean, does it mean they're actually going to play Harry Kane? Because that dude should be on the bench or not starting.
You know they're going to
play. Okay, they'd do that if they weren't, but God, international football is the fucking worst. Ugh.
Well, I'm confused because there's a friendly and there's a Nations Cup.
Yeah, I thought game. Nations Cup stuff. We should probably have figured this out before we podcasted, but we didn't. So here we are. I thought it was replacing qualifications as opposed to friendlies.
Yes, sure. That sounds right. That sounds sure. More like it. I don't sure. Know. Yeah.
It Look, sounds.
If you're
stupid.
Interested, you go to google.com and figure it out for yourself. This is not what we're here for.
All right.
Well, we're here to wildly speculate about nonsense we know nothing about.
Exactly. Well, I mean, that is a podcast.
Not provide useful information.
That is a podcast. So let's take a few questions before we leave. Maybe we could bring up the boot on this, you know, funeral dirge. Jake at Yedlin asks, if you had to pick two Spurs players, past and or present, to participate in a celebrity boxing match, who would it be? Rob, would you like to start us off?
One, Allen Hutton, and two, whichever Spurs player would stomp the biggest mud hole on Allen Hutton.
Okay, so you know Allen Hutton will insist on a bare knuckle brawl.
But then he'll probably fall over on the way to the ring. So,
so Luka Modric, it doesn't really matter who he boxes because he's just going to hurt himself.
Exactly. That's right. Box off.
Ben, who would you pick?
I want to see Robbie Keane. Speaking of Guy Ritchie movies, I want to see Robbie Keane go full Brad Pitt from Smash. I think he's got it in him. This unintelligible Irishman who's probably scrappier than you think. And I kind of want to see Chorluka in a boxing match. Like you. Was probably more suited to that than he ever was to playing football.
That pretty face. I would never want to see anyone damage that pretty face, Ben.
No one could.
Oh, he would just bob and weave.
He's notoriously mobile.
Yeah, I was about to say, his Spurs career really made you think he's going to dodge around the ring, not get hit?
Definitely. He floats like a butterfly.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Stinks like a sledgehammer.
I think I would pick, if we're talking about two Spurs players beating the shit out of each other, I think I would go with Allen Hutton and Saul Campbell because it's kind of like the opposite of Alien versus Predator. Whoever wins, we win. Like, we just get to see these two assholes beat the shit out of each other. And, you know, maybe, I don't know, like, they can both, like, die in the ring or something. I think that would be fun to watch.
I don't understand this animosity towards Allen Hutton. Like, he sucks, but he's not Saul Campbell. Like,
yeah, but he was really painful to watch.
He really sucks.
We've seen worse players.
Okay. So let's say
I want to see Ryan Mason. No,
let's follow this through. Let's follow. Yeah, Ryan Mason and Nabil Bentaleb in the Ben Daniels derby.
I don't think Ryan Mason would hold up too hot in a boxing match. I think
not anymore. No. So like,
one
okay,
punch would be all thing.
If we were gonna do like the all Spurs hate derby, like here in the boxing ring, like. Who would Saul Campbell fight? Like, if you had to, like, get somebody... I understand nobody's in his weight class, literally or figuratively, but, like, if you just wanted to see the two worst Spurs players you could think of beat the shit out of each other... Like,
I'm sure would.
Ooh, that's a good... That's yeah. A really good choice.
Tim Sherwood versus Paulinho. Actually, I'd love to see Eric Lamella whip the shit out of Tim Sherwood.
Yeah, but that's just like you want to see a guy you like beat the shit out of a piece of shit. Like, that would be really great, though, considering what a piece of garbage Tim Sherwood was to Eric Lamella. But, I mean, is Sherwood the other piece of shit we would put in a ring with Saul Campbell?
I'd be pretty happy with that.
I just can't think of anyone else we hate that much. Like, those are the two.
They've cut some good promos, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, if we turn this into professional wrestling, it's a whole other discussion. But Tim Sherwood is the most professional wrestler of all Tottenham players that I can think of.
Maybe. Well, he got the job exposing the business. So.
Yeah. No, Boateng was a Spurs player, so maybe him. I don't know. Ben, I know you have thoughts about this.
About wrestling?
About professional wrestling in Tottenham Hotspur, exactly.
I definitely do. I have a lot of feelings.
All right. Let's move on. Haley Bachrock wants us to answer. How will Poch get his next three warnings under this new mysterious touchline conduct rule? Ben?
So I don't understand what this new rule is. What did he get in trouble for in the first
Rob,
place?
Rob, you were informing us. He kicked a bottle on the sidelines during a game, right?
Yeah, something like that. So I feel like, the first warning was for kicking a bottle. So I feel like it would just get progressively bigger. So the second one would be for kicking like a cooler full of water bottles, and then the third one would be some kicking something bigger like Fernando Llorente.
Oh, I was going to say like Jesus Perez, so because, you know, he likes to spit water on the sidelines. But
yeah, but he's little.
He's bigger than a water bottle.
It's tough. I don't know. It's a close one.
With the faces that Pochettino has been making this season, I feel like he's not that far away from headbutting someone as they go by him on the sideline.
So we're going to take a slight detour, hurry for a second. Because I want our listeners to go back and look at this. I know Rob saw this with me. Ben, did you see the shot? It was like late in the game of a Spurs fan standing like near the post wearing an amazing shirt that was just Pochettino frowning on it.
I did not see that, no.
It was incredible. If anyone knows where I can purchase this shirt, please let me know, because I will buy it tomorrow. It was incredible. But Rob is right. Pochettino's been making some amazing frowny faces this year. I think if he's going to get these three warnings, they're going to be for his suddenly discovered fashion sense. He's already worn the all-black number this year. I think he's just going to get progressively racier, wearing less, you know, just fewer and fewer clothes every match until he's just, you know, managing in a thong one week and he just gets his third warning. So, and I think that's something we all have to look forward to.
So we are optimistic.
Very optimistic. Yeah. That Tottenham season will end with us seeing Mauricio Pochettino's ball sack.
I eagerly await that.
I know you do. I know you do. You talk to me all the time about how you just want to see more of Mauricio Pochettino. So
true, especially sack.
Well, I think that's it. That's time for us to wrap it up. Is everyone excited for the international break?
Super excited. I'm excited to not have to wake up at 7:30 in the morning.
You're gonna do that anyway, Ben. I mean,
yeah. It sucks being old. I eat dinner at 5:30, go to bed at 9, wake up at 6, you know. That's just my old man life.
I do want to, you know, I know Spurs have had some problems delivering to their fans this year, but I want to thank them for, you know, just continuing an important Tottenham tradition, like having an incredibly aggravating defeat immediately before an international break, which will be immediately followed by playing a team that is probably going to whip our ass. And I mean, you know, that's the kind of tradition that really keeps this club alive. It's the kind of thing that one generation can pass on to the next. And, you know, I'm just glad that we get to experience it yet again. It makes me very,
I see what to do about this for.
Yeah.
We need to think about it.
It's what being Tottenham is all about. Really truly is. And on that note, I think it's time to wrap it up. Rob, where can people find you on the internets?
At Reno Wallabout on Twitter and Brett Rainbow on Mastodon.
Jesus Christ. Ben, where can people find you on the web tubes?
You can find me at Comrade U Spurs on Twitter, and you can find me at Brett Rainbow everywhere.
And as always, you can find me on Twitter at Skipjack0079, and you can find my Mastodon instance toots at Ben, you want to help me out here?
You sound like you really know what you're talking about. Yeah. Keep going.
No, the best part is I don't think I made any of this up. I'm like 90% sure those are all real things.
Yeah. Instances and toots are both real.
Oh my God. Yeah, you can find me tooting on Mastodon on my instance, which is like, I don't know, period Brett Rainbow. I'm not sure how that works actually. In any case, for Ben, for Rob, and as always, for Brett Rainbow, I'm your host, Greg. Come on, you Spurs.